So we have Stuart Monckton, who is editor of Green Left Weekly, and he is here. We probably would have preferred to interview him after the after we know the full election result, but because next week is the Radiothon, we won't really have opportunity to talk about it. We might as well, and people are probably on a high right now about the British elections, so we might as well have kind of a lengthy discussion about the British elections.
And it's been all over the news, and given there's so many people here from the UK, I guess it's appropriate that we do talk about it. Good morning, Stuart.
Hey, how you going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
I hope it's warmer than here. It's freezing down here.
it's pretty similar, I think.
Okay, and the news has been running hot with the UK elections. Then they're saying that the exit polls would be saying something at 7. What have you got?
The exit polls, looking at the BBC and others, basically probably about the average of the polls or the more positive side of the polls that were there, which is, if these exit polls are true, it looks like the Tories won't form a majority.
Yes.
And that Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn will have done significantly better. Bearing in mind these are exit polls, and polls can be very, very wrong.
Yep.
But if this holds up, then it looks like Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn and his break with austerity will have won 30 or more seats above what Ed Miliband won. And combined with the SNP, who look like, according to exit polls, that the Tories have made some gains against them in Scotland, and with possibly, if you include the Liberal Democrats being willing to allow a Labour minority government, then you're actually looking more or less neck and neck with neither the Tories nor Labour plus other centre to the left or to the left parties combined having a majority.
So basically, is it a hung parliament? Is that what's
possibility?
This is what the exit polls suggest.
Yeah. Well, now that's what they suggest. But I guess one thing I kind of wanted to ask you now, which would be a good logical sort of end, is what is the chances of, what is the political argument that Labor is making for refusing to consider a coalition with the SNP, for example, or even the Liberal Democrats?
Well, there's two different things. One is entering a coalition. The other would be attempting to govern as a minority party, which would require support on certain bills that are essential to government, probably budget related types of things. I think that's versus actually trying to enter a coalition government. And I think that obviously it was proposed ahead, and I think there's two separate things. There's the idea of a progressive alliance, which is the way it's mostly talked about. And then there's also the concept of an anti-austerity alliance, which the Liberal Democrats may probably wouldn't necessarily be included, or would they only be included if they agreed to certain things. I think it's complicated by the fact that Labour has a unionist position on Scotland, and the SNP want a second referendum. So I think on both sides, an actual coalition there is a bit more complicated. But it does sort of show, I think it's part of, and the Corbyn team have always ruled this out. They've never said that they would do anything different, and I think it's part of heading the project of heading a party like the Labour Party, which is a huge electoral machine, very cynical machine, despite the very principled politics of Corbyn and his team. To even try and head that machine at all involves a whole lot of compromises, including just emphasising that they will do the best thing for Labour electorally. What the best thing for Labour electorally isn't necessarily exactly the same as, if you're not wedded to Labour in itself, but to a project outside of it, then it doesn't matter whether it's the Greens get the votes, or Labour gets the votes, or an SNP committed to breaking with austerity to some extent gets the votes, as long as it all adds up. But if you're heading the Labour machine, it does probably matter, and that's, I think, what drives the Corbyn team to emphasise that. I think it's part of the fact that the contradiction of this of a very left team at the head of with support of the members who want a different type of politics, wedded to a machinery that is incapable, to a certain extent, is incapable of doing politics differently.
I think one of the things that we need to perhaps discuss so that listeners are aware is even, you know, going into these elections, Labour wasn't in a position to place their people as candidates because the existing MPs who have been very hostile, a lot of them have been very hostile to Corbyn,
yes,
have an automatic right to stand in the electorate. And that process, I think we should unpick a little bit, Stuart. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that's a very important point. And if the Labour Party significantly increases its showing while the Tories are denied a majority, it has to be said that that's an achievement under quite incredible circumstances, given, as you say, like the large amounts of the MPs are hostile to Corbyn, and most of the machinery is hostile to Corbyn and have been sabotaging him all the way. It was, to some extent, once the campaign got going, it was toned down. But even in recent days, you've seen the hard right, the Blairites, come out in the middle of a campaign and threaten to remove Corbyn unless he wins more votes than the Tories, which, you know, I think don't think any poll suggested, and Labour obviously hasn't done since 2005. I think it was an incredible achievement against those odds and against the hostility of the media to perform as well as Corbyn has, and it's a testimony to the fact that actually the idea that he is unelectable isn't true. He can actually significantly improve Labour's standing with one hand tied behind his back, because he's, you know, and we have to say it's because it's, you know, he's leading and he's being pushed, you know, stands at the head of, you know, a tide of ordinary people, particularly young people who are sick of the status quo and have responded to Corbyn's call for a break with the status quo.
That's amazing, because I don't know how he's doing it, you know, at his age and so on. It's just awful. Think about the fact that the machine has disengaged so many people from the political processes.
Yeah.
I was listening to a guy who was being interviewed and was saying, look, I voted 6 times in these elections. Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is your chance to change. Why don't you go and vote? You know, I feel like shaking him, but sitting here watching that thing.
Yeah.
This is the apathy that the election machine has created out there, and the fact that, you know, Blair still is, you know, can be classified as a war criminal for all the things he did to the Middle East. I'm astounded by the enormous gains that Corbyn leadership has brought to this Labour Party. I just wondered if you could fill in a little bit about Ireland as well. There's a few things about Ireland that's not very popularly known.
Right.
Giving them independence or something along that line, yeah?
Well, I think, I mean, Jeremy, again, you get the difference between Corbyn himself and
the party
that he heads, and that Corbyn's actual platform for government represents, on the one hand, a very significant break with certainly the Labour Party, you know, most left platform that it's run on since the early 80s, since 83, and probably even more radical than that. But at the same time, it's not a total representation of Corbyn's politics. So for example, Corbyn has long been a supporter of Irish independence,
yes,
but that's not in the platform. I mean, the question in Ireland is with the six counties is, that has been discussed a bit, is the fact that the Republican Party, Sinn Féin, don't take their seats because they don't, they stand in order to have to show the popular support for a united Ireland and their position of a border poll to seek to resolve that. But they don't take their seats because they don't see themselves as a British party and that has any place in Westminster. And having always opposed British interference in Ireland, they also believe it would be hypocritical for them to interfere in what they see as a foreign country. That's sort of, you know, come down to it, if, you know, Sinn Féin's four or five, or however many MPs they get, don't stand and don't sit in Westminster. They've never said that they would. They've emphasised in this campaign that they won't, but that those seats could hand Labor governments if they were willing to. I don't think they'd ever go into a coalition government. Sinn Féin has no desire to be in government in the United Kingdom at all.
Absolutely.
It would just be insane for them to do so. But they could, vote. If they were sitting, they could give certain votes to allow Corbyn to form. That would obviously raise a lot of questions and be controversial, but I don't think Sinn Féin are going to change their position. They've had it for, not right now, they've had it for 100 years. It would be a very big shift for them to do it.
The other element that amuses me to a certain extent is, despite the fact that these MPs within the Labour Party are so much against Corbyn and they want to declare, they virtually declared him unelectable for some time, and that is the core of their campaign. But at the same time, if they don't get elected because of their campaign, they are the ones who are going to lose the seats. The internal contradictions are glaring.
Yeah.
I just wondered, how do you unpick that? I just think these guys are crazy, to carry on the way they are politically.
Well, I think that's a lot of them are subject to those contradictions, and I think a lot of them probably have been campaigning, not necessarily the hard right Blairites, but the others probably have been campaigning, genuinely to win. They would rather it under a different leader, but given this is the leader they've got, they'll do it. For that reason, the big contradiction they got is they gambled by they just thought Corbyn would go when they all voted against him.
Mm.
He had the majority of parliamentarians from Labour passed that motion of no confidence last year.
Yeah.
And they said he was going to go. I mean, he had a very small vote, but of course they don't understand that Corbyn is not playing by their rules. They don't understand his project is so different.
Yeah.
That he is committed to support, first of all, a beachhead for the left. He's not going to walk away from it. Second of all, he's loyal to the members. And of course they were unable to win. And so having done that, then they were kind of left in a situation of running not just with a leader they don't like, but a leader that they have sabotaged, thinking that would get them a leader that they like. Mm-hmm. So I think that in the wash-up, most the right and probably even the more centre forces in the Labour Party, they don't really want to win with Corbyn's platform. I mean, this is a very radical platform compared to what's there at the moment. A lot of these things wouldn't have been remarkable 40 or 50 years ago, but they are remarkable. They are remarkable now. And it's quite clear that British capital don't want it and would sabotage it from day one. And I don't think that most Labour people, they're professional politicians. They've been up through the student movement. It's like here, they go through the machine.
Yes.
And they produce machine politicians. They wouldn't even know. They wouldn't know how to. They wouldn't have the slightest clue what to do. The City of London didn't like them. They've got no idea how to respond, and no interest in actually antagonising powerful interests.
Well, I think one interesting thing that this is. A thing that's been kind of revealed since Corbyn got elected as the Labour leader is kind of like, I think a comment here that Stuart, you can definitely comment on is basically, I think the role of the kind of Blairite MPs is, I think to really summarise their psychology, I think they're just really opportunists. They just swing whatever way the wind blows. And It's quite telling that The Guardian has kind of been revealed for what it is ever since Corbyn has been selected leader.
BBC, thank you.
BBC has always been crap, but people have always had these illusions in, especially progressive left people in The Guardian and New Statesman. And those two publications have, since Corbyn's been selected leader, been revealed absolutely for what they are. And even though what's interesting is within this election period, after basically crapping on Corbyn for like the past 2 years, The Guardian finally goes and says, oh, yes, the election, yes, vote Corbyn, vote for the Labour Party. Although New Statesman is still kind of printing the same old anti-Corbyn stuff, though it's printing a bit more pro-Corbyn stuff than it used to, but there was an article recently that said, oh, Corbyn is leading the Labour Party to the worst disaster in history.
He should do a Trump on them.
Yeah, look, that's, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing also that, you know, Corbyn has had to do this against the media, but it does indicate that the media and the, you know, the political class are, to some extent, are out of touch. Now, of course, it's a polarised situation. It's not simply that all of this sort of distaste with the status quo is going to a very left project around Corbyn. It's, you know, it's also, I think, Theresa May represents really the Brexit vote of reaction, and the fact that it didn't do better than... It looks like it will do a lot worse than expected, which is why she called the election, is, of course, very, very heartening. And it just, I think, does show that the political class are really out of touch, and the media are out of touch. So they, first of all, they wanted the combination of, they thought their campaigns would make Corbyn unelectable and make Labour perform worse under Corbyn. But also, they probably just... they're so out of touch that they genuinely just thought there was no hope. There was no hope for any other course. And I think that, you know, it's quite clear that ordinary people have responded extremely well. And with an unbiased media and with a Labour Party that was committed to the platform that it formerly has now, and to what its members voted for when they voted for Corbyn, if we had that, the elections would look very, very different again. I mean, I think it would be a much bigger vote for Labour if people were able to get it. And the only reason they were able to get this sort of unfiltered thing anyway was once the campaign started and you started to have the big rallies and the media started to, you know, were forced to report what Corbyn was actually saying, particularly when Theresa May wasn't giving them anything. She was not turning up to the debates and all of that. Once that starts to happen and young people started to get a sense that if they actually did relate to politics this time, if they did actually do it, then maybe there is something on offer for them. Once that started to happen, then you have, you know, the famous, you know, Labour surge that people talked about, where the polls went from atrocious to looking much, much closer, and looking what it appears from the exit polls, what the exit polls are indicating, which is Labour making gains and the Tories losing their majority.
Just a quick question, Stuart. I know the unions had, or at least quite a number of unions had swung behind Corbyn, especially in Gold Country, where Margaret Thatcher smashed the unions.
Yeah.
What is your feel at this point in terms of, you know, did that increase? Was there a widespread union support for Corbyn, or were there too many right-wing unions?
Well, again, I think the unions are, you know, a bit like the Labour machine and things like The Guardian, even the right unions campaigned for Corbyn. One of the things that is interesting is some of the powerful unions, you know, Unite and some of the others that were with Corbyn from the start. What the real story there, I think, is that they never broke with Corbyn, even with the polling. And I think that really speaks to how urgently needed the reforms that Corbyn stands for are. I mean, these are things, because without them, the unions cannot rebuild. So, for example, things like zero contracts, which he proposes to abolish.
Yep.
If you have zero contracts, you can't organise a workforce very easily. Also, Corbyn will get rid of anti-union laws, a whole series of things that will shift the balance back in favour of working people, not necessarily to dramatically in and of themselves alter things, but just to give enough breathing space and enough democratic rights for working people that they themselves can organise and push back. And I think that explains why so many powerful unions not just backed Corbyn, but never broke with Corbyn, even when the Parliamentary Labour Party and all the rest were breaking with Corbyn. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, like a bit like sometimes the left will make a critical call of, well, we don't really like, you know, this party, but the others are far worse, so we'll give a critical vote. I think, you know, the more right-wing unions and the more, you know, right, it's why The Guardian at the end of the day still came out for Labour. They still just hate, you know, this is a very, very hard right Tory government. The Tories, these are people to the right of Thatcher quite noticeably.
Yes.
So obviously, it's, you know, even if they would prefer it wasn't Corbyn, they, you know, the alternative is to give power or to campaign for or to allow forces that, you know, want to destroy them.
Exactly. It's suicidal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that the you know, it always amuses me that these unions are suicidal in the main when they are so strongly supporting employers and politicians who support employers or the capitalist forces, without this consciousness that you are actually on a suicidal path here, because you will have no members at the end, like it's happening here. It's gone from 60% in the 70s, 80s to now, what, 18%, 20%. And it's something they don't seem to learn from. It always amazes me. Now, Jacob wants to ask you something.
I'm sorry about that. This is a question I want to ask. It's basically about, you know, because we know Britain is a very deeply kind of racist country. And I kind of wanted to ask the question about, you know, what is the role that, you know, Islamophobia and racism has played in this sort of election, and especially in terms of the recent terror attacks that have happened in the UK?
I think the role of Islamophobia and racism was seen very strongly in the Brexit vote, and in particular what we then saw with effectively a hard right coup within the Tories, and the Tories essentially standing on and taking over the base and the, you know, the platform of the UK Independence Party. And we saw, I imagine, that the polls will, the results will reflect a big drop in the vote for UKIP, as it did in the council elections when the Tories just ate up their votes. And so I think that even the Tories' vote does go down, the fact that they still remain the biggest party or the rest of it, it's really unexplainable without racism, because, and without an appeal to sort of, you know, the legacy of imperial privilege, even if no one feels that very much.
We do in the third world.
Yeah. But I mean, like a pensioner doesn't, I mean, in that sense, they may not feel very privileged, but they want to hold on to what privilege that they have, which is that they are above, they feel that they are above the third world. And that's probably why it's stronger with older people, because they remember that.
The good old days.
Yeah, they remember the old, even the old social democratic contract,
yes,
welfare state contract, was still based on Britain's imperial position. As you know, the post World War II settlement was based on that, and as Attlee, it's one of the things that was so exciting about Corbyn was he's always been an internationalist and an anti-racist and an anti-imperialist. Mm. Whereas, for example, the Attlee government, which implemented a number of pro-worker reforms, at the same time was trying to hold on to the remnants of British colonialism.
That's right.
And so those reforms were underpinned by Britain's imperial position. So I think you can't help. Why would anyone vote Tory, aside from a banker?
Good question.
The only way you can explain it, the only way you can explain it is that appeal to racism. And so I think this election you have, particularly, and it's heightened by not just Brexit, but as was mentioned, the terror attacks really put it right up front. The two responses: do you have a response of hate, fear, racism, build up the walls, or do you have one more based on solidarity? And I think, in a very uneven way. There were certain compromises in this platform, in this manifesto, that step away from some of Corbyn's traditional positions on some of this stuff, on some compromises on free movement and the like. But nonetheless, our platform is still way ahead of the Tories on this, and anyone, and certainly of the Australian Labor Party on this question. So I think in terms of the act, that plays into the elections in the sense, well, your life isn't very good. Who do you blame? Do you actually blame the 1% and the political class who serve the 1%, or do you blame, your Muslim neighbour, or a refugee from Syria who just wants to live their life, or someone who's from Eastern Europe who will get will actually have a better life there? Which response do you have? And so I think that was definitely, the election definitely occurs in that context. As to the actual impact of the terror attacks, I think it's so hard to tell. It would probably take a lot of unpacking. Superficially, you would assume, I think probably people assumed, and, I know my Facebook wall was filled, as probably a lot of other people's were, once when Manchester happened, was, well, that's it. That's the that's it. The Tories are going to romp it in. The fact that that hasn't happened is both heartening, but also I think it will take a bit to unpack. Would it have been the case that without that the polls would have been even better for Labor. It's an unknowable thing, obviously.
That's right.
Which is why I think we've got to be a bit careful and just, you know, which, but it is heartening that it hasn't led to, you know, it hasn't led to the poll. The polls didn't seem to indicate a shift back to the Tories after that. And that's quite a heartening thing.
Yes, on that positive note, Stuart, let's wrap up this interview. And thank you so much for being available so early in the morning to give such an exciting interview. I've woken up and been feeling excited and hoping that Corbyn will win. But anyway, thanks a lot, Stuart. We'll talk to you again
Sure thing.
After the elections. Okay. Bye.
See you. Bye.